This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now here's David Allen, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Welcome to the show. David, Chris, and Bob here with you. Before we get to the crux of everything, Bob, I tried to convince everyone yesterday at church that while a loss is bad, a lot of good things happened Saturday night that you can't overlook. And I thought some of those things is that Cozart played really well, that you didn't know what you had. And I thought, yes, he made a couple mistakes, but I think all in all, he played really well. But I thought the defense played great. And their effort shouldn't be overlooked in that loss.
Right, and I think, you know, you got some production out of special teams. The punting was good. The kicking was good. No, I think there was a lot of good things. It's unfortunate a few series of events, and many of them were preventable in the fourth quarter, allowed Washington State to come back. I mean, Boise State builds a 21-point lead at 31-10, and then, you know, Washington State gets a drive, and then they get a couple of gifts, one that quarterback could have controlled, and another one that was probably, maybe if you're going to say somebody's fault, the return guy Williams maybe should have tried to come up and field it, which would have chased Reed Harrison Ducros out of the way so it doesn't, you know, hit off him. But, I mean, they needed a series of events. When you sit there, you really can feel momentum. And when Boise State had the fumble recovery by Weaver and rumbling in for the score, boy, the people in red were very quiet and the people in blue were, you know, jumping around and having a lot of fun. And then after, not the first touchdown, but after the interception of the shuffle pass and it was run in, you know, I said on the air at the time that I thought Boise State would have to score once more in regulation to win, and they didn't do it. Went to overtime, and then overtime, as everybody knows, is kind of a coin flip. I mean, how Boise State held Washington State out of the end zone when the ball was inside the 1 yard line.
Oh, I know.
Thought it was an incredible performance. But this is a good team. If you're looking at something this season at Boise State that's been a problem, and every year there's a couple of things that pop up in games, they've given up 3 defensive touchdowns to the opposition. They got one back in the game against Washington State, but that means in each of the games, the Troy game and the Washington State game, they gave away 7 more points, just basically giving away on a turnover for a score. You have to be then 7 points better than your opponent to win. Boise State was 7 points better than Troy, but in a game with Washington State that the teams are pretty much even, you can't afford to give somebody 7 points.
When your defense is frustrating a quarterback so bad that the coach pulls the starter, Falk is pulled because he's ineffective and making bad choices, you know you've done some good work on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, and then Helinski through an interception that Miles got, so the backup came in and compounded things. They went back to Falk, and then Falk, unfortunately, was injured like Rippon was. If you were listening to the game in the fourth quarter, and you know, you're a casual fan, and you're expecting to hear Falk and Rippon, and it's Helinski back to pass, it's Cozart, which game am I listening to? And hopefully both Rippon and Falk will be back able to play for their teams. But both of them, unfortunately, when they got hit, were not protected very well at all.
But before we get to the cuts, it was kind of a war of attrition. Boise State had numerous injuries.
Yeah, Butler went out. I think Blakely went out.
Yes.
I want to say there was one other.
There was one other. I thought there were 4 biggies that went out Saturday night. So it was.
And then Falk went out. Cornerback Moulton went out for Washington State. It was a physical game.
It was a real
physical game. I'm really concerned with Boise State having to play a Thursday night game coming back after a Saturday night game that was that tough. It's going to be tough physically to get ready for the game.
Luckily, it's only New Mexico. Let's talk to Coach Harsin when we come back. It's 8:42. You're listening to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
David, Chris, and Bob Beeler here with you talking about the 47-44. Triple, you get when the overtime scoring so quickly, you lose track. But 47-44, triple overtime loss to Washington State.
And on my score sheet, I had to go all the way over to a backside because I ran out of room with all my notes. There was so much action going on. Tough game. Coach Harsin on the post game show, I guess probably talking to him about 1:15, 1:30 Mountain Time after the game, gave us an overview of his thoughts of what he saw.
You know, the mindset coming in here, they're ready to play, and we're playing a very good football team on the road. I thought we showed a lot of guts out there, but, you know, football is a game. It's about technique. It's about details. It's about situations. And, you know, those are certainly areas that we've got to continue to keep improving. You know, we're not there yet. And overall for this team, they fought, and you go into three overtimes and you play a team like we did, and you fight like that, and we came up short. And there's reasons why, and you go back to work, and we've got to do that in a hurry with the schedule that we have and the turnaround that we're facing this next week.
I won't disagree. The team was ready to play.
Absolutely.
From the get-go.
That first drive Boise State had, mixed the run in the pass, got ahead 7-0. The defense did a great job again early in the game. There wasn't a lot of scoring. It was only 10-10 at the half. And then, you know, you look at there were 16 points for Washington State and 13 for Boise State in the overtime. So when you look at 47-44, you think, wow, it was an offensive show. No, not necessarily. And considering the defenses got into the end zone on three touchdowns, the offenses really were kind of held in check. Boise State lost Brett Rippon, sacked a couple of times. On the second time, he was knocked out of the game. Montel Cozart came in, played pretty well. This is what Coach Hartson had to say about the two quarterbacks playing last game.
Yeah, Brett didn't come back in the game, and I don't know exactly moving forward what that means yet, so I'm not going to comment on anything further. As far as Montel coming in here, you know, that's part of it. You got to come in and be ready to play. And, you know, overall on the offensive side, you know, the turnovers is what hurts you. You can't have the turnovers, you know, and those were critical. And so that's part of the game. That's just, you know, what we know and what needs to be something that we fix. You know, and we've got to put ourselves in better positions. I thought there were times we ran it. You know, they did a good job, too. They got some a really good D-line. I thought the O-line, as we got into maybe the second quarter and on from there, we got better. But we gave up sacks. We gave up some free hitters. And, you know, those are things that have got to be remedied. And we got to find a way to get that started from the beginning of the game. So some overall, some good things, you know, offensively, but not enough. And we're certainly, you know, working on that. And we'll go back to it. You know, I thought Montel, when he came in, did a good job and used his legs at times and was able to make some throws.
Got to keep the quarterback clean.
Well, and I think that, you know, he talked about some free hits. The two sacks that Rippon took, the one that he fumbled, for anybody that says, well, the quarterback needs to hold on to the ball, I dare anybody to stand there with Mata'afa
Hercules
below and Luvu up top and hang on to the ball. And then you look at the other one. I mean, the blocking was not there, and unfortunately, it caused Rippon to go out of the game.
Yeah, it was not good. But again, you can, if you want to see the glasses half full, I thought it showed that Montel Cozart can do a lot of really good things on the football field. And yes, he made some mistakes, but I thought, all in all, you know, he was 12 of 20, which is pretty good. Rushed for 72 yards, which is pretty good. And so I'd rather take away the good things from the game than to just focus on the five or six.
And then he
back.
Talks about, you know, being physical and coming back. I mean, Thursday's a quick turnaround. I mean, normally you get two extra days to rest, two extra days to practice, two extra days to, you know, the option we haven't even gotten to is what New Mexico has. New Mexico 1-1. They didn't look very good against New Mexico State. But, you know, it's season's on. You got to play when they put the games on the schedule. He also talked a little bit about the overtimes, and Pete asked him if you practice and you simulate overtime in practice, and Coach Hartson said not as much as you would, and said, you know, overtime's just kind of a chancy proposition.
You simulate the overtime. Here's the mindset. This is what you're in. It becomes a 0-0 game. You went through, and part of that is your conditioning. That is, you know, where you are as a football team, being able to play that fifth quarter, really. And that's the mindset. And I thought our guys, they came up and we were into that fifth quarter. We were into overtime, and they were ready. They were ready to play. You know, nobody, they were hydrating. They were ready to play. They were physically ready. They were mentally ready. And, you know, you go into those three overtimes, really hard to simulate that. But, you know, these guys fought, and they did a good job.
I know a lot of people don't love it. I love the college overtime. It's much better than the pro game. I like starting at the 25 and seeing. And If I was a head coach, I'd want to go second.
Absolutely. It's like baseball.
Yes,
you want to bat
exactly.
last.
Yeah. So if you get a field goal, I know if I get six, we're done. But if you get six, I know I got to get six. So.
And if you get three, like Boise State did in the third overtime, actually they did in the first overtime as well, you're precarious. Your defense is in a tough spot because – you know, the game is over. If you now in the second overtime, Boise State going second had an option to maybe go for two and try to win it. Now everybody says, oh, you could go for two and win it, but you could also go for two and lose it, like Georgia Tech did the week before. So, you know, and your defense is playing pretty well. It's one of those that you make the decision, and if you make the 2-point conversion, you look great. If you miss it, you look poor, and unfortunately, Boise State couldn't get it done in the third overtime.
All right, we'll be back after the break to wrap up Saturday's game and then talk a little bit about Thursday night. It's 8:51. You're listening to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
8:53, David, Chris, and Bob here with you. You know, I think when the schedule came out, I think everybody kind of said, oh, we'll probably lose that game at Washington State. So while the outcome is not a surprise, I think the thing that sticks in everyone's craw is how they lost it. And that's why it's a bigger loss.
Anytime you're ahead 21 points in the fourth quarter, you think you probably should hang on and win. But here's the thing about sports. Once the game's in the past, can you go back and change it?
Cannot.
So you have to not let a game beat you again.
Yes.
So you have to be fired up. You have to be focused, which I know they will be. And then you have to, you know, be physically ready to go against New Mexico. Fortunately, they played on Saturday. Now, they played earlier, and they didn't have to travel on Saturday, but they do have to come here Thursday night. I think we'll be ready. This team has been fired up, ready to go. 6 o'clock Thursday night. I think it's the most important game of the season. First conference game. It's a division game. If you win this game, you're still right at the front of the Mountain West. If you drop the game, then all of a sudden you're playing catch-up and hoping that New Mexico loses so that you can get to the conference championship game. I said that the non-conference game, not as big a deal. This is huge. This is, if you're going to go to one game this year, go Thursday night because it's the biggest game of the season.
Yeah, and New Mexico does play a squirrely offense, which can give teams fits on a short week. I know they lost to the Aggies on Saturday night, and I pulled all my hair out because of it, because that's 2 years in a row now, and it's ridiculous to lose to that horrible agricultural school. But I think I agree with you.
Said by a UNM grad.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part. I think you're right. I think the players are going to be ready, and they know that if they're not ready, the same thing that happened 3 years ago, as strange as it is, could happen again, and that's the last thing you want is, A, to lose a conference game, but to lose a conference game at home
and
is awful.
And I thought last year the team pointed for that game.
Yes.
It was a game that they had circled, they won, and I thought the offense had its best performance of the year. Rippon had 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and Boise State looked extremely good against them last year, all phases of the ball.
Any word on Rippon, on is he going to get re-examined today? Is
a press conference
maybe something
is
at 1:30.
Okay, sister station KTIK will have the press conference. I'm sure Coach Harsin will be asked about it. He was in street clothes. You know, the 2 days less makes it a little more difficult for somebody to bounce back from something than it is if the game is Saturday.
Sure. 1 o'clock pregame here on 670 KBOI. 6 o'clock kickoff, so it's a good time for the game. And the weather's might be some possible rain. But the temperature is only going to be 70 degrees, so it's good football playing weather, too. So
it'll be a lot cooler than it was for the Troy game.
Yeah. Needless to say, 70 is a little bit better than 97.
Yeah.
So 1-1 on the season, like you say, conference is what it's all about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're going to be judged on whether you win the conference or not. I mean, you would have liked to have won the game from Washington State, but last year you were 10-2. If you'd beaten Air Force in Wyoming and lost to BYU in Washington State, went undefeated in the league, won the league, I think 10-2 would have looked a lot better last year than the 10-2 Boise State had.
All right, very good. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Bronco Tuesday tomorrow. Volleyball will be in the house. Chris and I will be back after the news on 670 KBOI.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
David Allen, Chris Walton, Todd with 1D here for you today on this Monday morning. Paul J. will be back tomorrow. Today, obviously, is the 16th anniversary of 9/11. Were you in talk radio at the time?
Yeah.
You've been doing this show for not long enough time.
Well, the thing is, we didn't even have a portion of this show that was a call-in at the time.
Oh, really?
When 9/11 happened, we were on from 5 o'clock until 9 every day.
Okay.
And we just did our thing where we talked about the news and you know, messed around and whatever. That was the show. And then after 9/11... so many people wanted to get on and talk about 9/11.
Sure.
that we decided to start the call-in portion of the show, which, you know, from then, since then, has been from 8:30 to 10. So we added an extra hour to the program as well. But that particular day, you know, it was early September, and I always have a little bit of vacation about that time of year. And so I had taken the week off. And as is my habit, and was even then, I didn't go anywhere. I stayed home.
Sure.
So I was at home, and I woke up about 7 o'clock and happened to flip on the radio, and I had flipped it on to our rock station over here,
KKGL.
KKGL, the Eagle. And Scott Cruz was on and doing some kind of a newscast, and he said, well, let's go to traffic. And the traffic guy said, well, obviously the airport is closed. And I thought, oh, no, has there been a plane crash at the airport?
Yeah.
And so I flipped on the television, and at that point, by the time I saw it, both of the towers had already been hit.
Okay.
Neither one of them had fallen. And then I watched it for a couple of minutes, and I was supposed to play golf with some of the employees from here later in the day. And I called in, and I asked, because the program director at the time was a guy named Jason, and he was one of them. And I said, I'm going to guess that we're not going to play golf today. And he says, you're right. We've canceled that.
Yeah.
And I said, would you like me to come in and work? And he said, if you would. And so I showered real quick and came in and worked until midnight.
Yeah.
And there was something to do every second that I was here. Phil Henderson, another guy that happened to be here at that time, and he's been a TV tech guy in town for years. He and I went on about 8 o'clock that night, and, we simulcast on every one of our stations, and we had people just call in, and Phil said, well, what are we going to talk about? And I said, well, we don't know that many details about why things happened, or, you know, we just know the who, and or we don't even know the who at that time. We just knew what.
Sure.
And I said, why don't we just ask people to call in and talk about how they felt about it, and what, you know, where were you when you heard it? What did you, you know, what did you think of it? You know, and how did you feel? And we had 4 hours of solid calls. I mean, we didn't have a single open line. I mean, as quick as we'd hang up on somebody, the other line would ring.
Yeah.
And that just went on for 4 solid hours. And we were on all the FM stations and KBOI. We didn't have KTIK at the time. But we probably could have gone another 4 hours. We could have talked for 8 straight hours about it. And then once we started doing the talk show in the mornings for several months, it was really the only topic.
Yeah. For me, I was in Texas at the time, and I was getting dressed, and my boss at the time called me and said, hey, a plane just hit the World Trade Center. I said, oh yeah, I'm getting ready to come in. I'm finishing up. I'm tying my tie. I'll be right there. And I'm thinking, how does a plane hit the World Trade Center? I'm thinking it's a prop plane, some Cessna or something.
Like when Corey Lytle crashed,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, how does that happen? And I switched over to CNN, and about 2 minutes later, the second jet hit.
Yeah.
And so I got to see that hit, and I went, that's not a prop plane, and that's not an accident. So we went in, and we were doing live stuff because we had a morning show at the time. We were doing live stuff, and we were breaking in, and all of a sudden the Pentagon got hit, and then all of a sudden the plane went down in Pennsylvania, and you're just getting all this information's coming in. And finally, I think it was about 10 o'clock that morning, we went to wall-to-wall coverage from ABC News at the time because we were an ABC affiliate, and we stayed with ABC News the rest of that week. We never went to local programming, and we did ABC News from 10 o'clock Tuesday morning till, I think it might have been even Sunday. We didn't stop. We just kept rolling with it for the 5 days, 6 days of that, and then went back to normal programming on the Monday after the 17th. And it was weird there because I lived close to DFW. And so I got used to at least when I first moved there and I lived close to DFW, the planes taking off all the time used to bug me. And then after about 2 years, because I moved there in 99, so by the time 9/11 rolled around, I was used to it. I didn't even hear hardly at all.
You remember how for about 8 days, though, all the planes were grounded.
And that's what I'm saying. Right, that's what the weirdest part for me was.
The weirdest thing in the world was about a week later when they started flying again. All of a sudden, you'd look up and you'd see a plane and everybody'd freeze like, oh, my God, look, there's a plane in the air.
See, I thought it was weirder when they stopped just because I live so close to DFW.
Right, yeah.
When I didn't have that sound 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it was really weird to me to be out running and not hear jets overhead. It was very strange.
My in-laws were in Scotland, and they got an extended vacation.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Let's before I have an article from USA Today about the 10 things you might not remember about 9/11. Let's go to Pro-Life real quick on 9/11. Pro-Life, you're on 670 KBOI with David and Chris. How are you?
Very good. The 9/11 Commission, they did not report things like they should have. I have a blasting license, and also I know a little bit about explosions and buildings coming down. Building 7, which was not even hit, it was some hours afterwards, it collapsed in a controlled explosion. And those buildings getting hit at the top of those airplanes would do severe damage to those buildings, but it would not cause them to collapse. There was time delays, explosives down those columns.
Pro-Life, before you go on any further, because it's ridiculous, why would they do that? Why would they do that?
I have no idea. But
well, then it's ridiculous. I just can't. I just can't have the conspiracy on. Not today. Just not happening. I just can't. I just can't. Because all you have to do is go to YouTube. Google. There was a guy who did YouTube specials on how the buildings came down, how Building 7 came down. And there was no controlled demolition. It was not a government. It was not an inside job. And it's a load of crap. 9:13 on 670 KBOI.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. KBOI rewards code is REMEMBER, REMEMBER. Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword REMEMBER, and get your 5,000 rewards points. It's also time for the Paul Jay play of the game. If you know what that play was from Saturday night, call 208-336-3711. Be the sixth caller at 208-336-3711, and you will win the $50 gift card from the good folks at Lock, Stock, and Barrel if you know the play of the game.
And you want that, by the way.
And you do want that, yes. Let's quickly go to the phones, though. Darren in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself?
We're doing well, thank you.
Yeah, my comment is part of the thing on the last commenter there about the controlled explosion. For anybody to believe that that was an inside job or a controlled demolition, I mean, they believe they may have done the research by looking at some YouTube videos of people that are trying to explain how to do it, but it's easy to click on a YouTube video and actually go to professional demolition experts.
Yes.
And see the months and months of preparation and advance work that goes into taking down even a small building, something like that. That would be a minimum of 6 to 8 months of cutting holes in walls, planning charges. There's no way. It would be absolutely impossible for anything like that to occur without everybody on site knowing.
I agree with you 100%. Thanks for the call, Darren. We appreciate
it.
Yeah, and you and I talked about it off the air. If it was some big government conspiracy, you don't think sometime in the last 16 years somebody would have gone to somebody and said, I've got all the information. I want $1 billion to write this book. And they would have become billionaires to write a book on an inside job. And
yeah,
I just can't stand it. It just makes me insane.
I don't know. There are some people who write on the internet, who talk on the radio and things like that, who have backed those things up for some time. And I don't know. If you look at their entire body of work, you find out a lot of those people aren't particularly credible.
Exactly. Let's go to Mark. Mark. You were the sixth caller. Do you know the Paul Jay play of the game from Saturday night?
Yes, I do.
And what was it?
It was a Curtis Weaver 55-yard fumble recovery. Put BSU up 31-10.
Let's listen and find out.
Boise State almost jumped off sides, but they got back. Falk back to pass. Rush from behind. He got sacked again. The ball got knocked out. Boise State picks it up around midfield. And it's Curtis Weaver sprinting down the sideline. He will score. And Boise State, for the second week in a row, gets a non-offensive touchdown.
Fantastic, Mark. You were correct. You stayed up late and enjoyed at least the post-game show, maybe not the end of the game. But the big thing you're going to enjoy, my friend, is that you've just won a $50 gift card from the good folks at Lock, Stock, and Barrel. And you can come pick that up here at the station. We're open Monday through Friday from 8 till 5. So come by at your earliest convenience. Take advantage of that and enjoy the great, yummy food.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Have a great day. 9:22 now at 670 KBOI. And that happens every post-game show, folks. Paul Jay will have, you know, Rick will announce what Paul Jay's play of the game was. And if you're the correct caller when we ask for it on Monday morning, you will win the $50 gift card from the good folks at Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
And like you said, that's definitely a place you want to go. Right. There was a time when, you go back to the 70s, and if you went into a steak place, most of them had a salad bar that was really nice and stuff like that. Well, Lock, Stock, and Barrel is still like that. They were like that in the 70s when they were up on Emerald. They've been downtown for some time now, but they are a great place to get dinner.
Let me tell you, in fact, about the sweet deal this week. It is for Lock, Stock, and Barrel, can get $50 worth of certificates for just $25. Lock, Stock, and Barrel has been voted Boise's best steakhouse 10 years in a row.
Half price date.
Thanks to aged hand-carved steaks, succulent prime rib, delicious seafood, lamb, and much more. This Friday morning at 9 o'clock, go to KBOI.com and click on the Sweet Deals link to get this great offer. You really, seriously, don't want to miss it. Lock, Stock, and Barrel, one of the best places in town. 9:23, we're talking about 9/11, since this is the 16th anniversary. Let me start this. This is from USA Today today. And it's the 10 things you may have forgotten about 9/11. Number one is, we don't know how the hijackers got into the cockpits of some of the planes. The comprehensive report on the commission created to investigate the attacks, which was published in 2004, said no one could determine how the hijackers were able to get into the cockpits of the four commercial airliners they hijacked. A flight attendant on American Flight 11 speculated that they had jammed their way in. The 9/11 report said perhaps the terrorists stabbed the flight attendant to get the cockpit open.
And my guess, too, was you knock on the cockpit door or the thing. I mean, first of all, are they locked? Were they locked at that time?
Yeah,
I don't know that for a fact.
I don't know. They're obviously fortified now.
And you've got one of the flight attendants, and let's say it's a female, and you have her. A knife to her,
Box cutters.
You have a box cutter to her throat, and you're going to kill her unless they open the door.
Yeah.
Well, up until that point, there had been a lot of hijackings, or what we called them skyjackings, back in the 70s.
Yep.
And what they always did was they landed the plane somewhere and negotiated.
Yes.
And that's what you did.
Yep.
You know, nobody at that time thought that you would actually take over a big airliner and crash it on purpose.
Yeah, it was not thought of as a weapon.
So rather than get somebody killed, chances are they, let them have the cockpit.
Exactly. Number two, passengers and crew aboard the planes provided critical information. Those aboard the four hijacked planes called family and friends from their cell phones or used the aircraft radio communications to report the hijackings. That alerted authorities to the hijackings and enabled them to identify why they could not track the planes after their navigation systems were turned off.
Right.
So a lot of people don't remember that. Light passenger loads made it easier for the hijackers to maneuver. American 11, bound from Boston to L.A., only had 81 passengers on board.
And it was a lot.
Out of a possible 156.
Right. Yeah, and it had, about twice as many capacity.
United 175 only had 56 passengers. American 77 had 56 passengers. And United 93 had only 37 passengers. About 20% of their load is all. I'll go through the final six of these. That's the first three. We've also got Rich standing by. He wants to talk about 9/11. It's 9:26. It's David and Chris, Todd with 1D. You're listening to 670 KBOI.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
9:36. Welcome back to the show. This portion of it brought to you by 4K a day. Your shot at $1,000 four times a day starts this Thursday, the 14th. The 4K a day on 670 KBOI. Full details at KBOI.com.
I have a personal memory from Bob.
Okay.
He says, my wife's first cousin, Robert Rasmussen, died in the Twin Towers. We had seen him that summer at a big gathering for a 40th birthday party for my wife's brother. Robert was a great guy, had three small children. I remember the angst for everyone in the family while waiting to see if Robert ended up in a hospital somewhere. That never happened. The Twin Towers going down was a national tragedy, but much more to people who lost loved ones.
Agree 100%. 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264, or #670 on your Verizon Wireless. Rich in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you today?
Well, all good. I got a question for Chris, but that day, for some reason, I didn't have any work to do or something that day, and I kind of slept in. And I rolled over and hit the button on the radio, and the first thing I heard was Paul saying they looked like two Roman candles burning. And I thought maybe there was a fire sugar beet factory or something over in Napa. So I went over and turned on the TV, and I did see the first tower collapse. But I was going to ask Chris, if you guys were only on the air till 9 o'clock, who generally came on after you? Because I remember you guys talking about that and people calling in.
Oh, that was at that time. It would have been Doug Raper.
Oh, that's what I was wondering. I couldn't remember how long ago that he was on, because I remember people calling in and saying, "Well, you know, you should go donate blood. They're going to need a lot of blood." And it turned out they didn't, because there was very few people
who were actually injured. I mean, a lot of people got, you know, very bad lung disease because of it, but people were either killed or they were unharmed, essentially.
Yeah, when you said that, I was thinking, well, I used to listen to talk radio, and I didn't remember who came on after you.
Yeah.
All right. My first memory, I turned the radio on, and Paul, now I'll always remember that. He said, it looks like two Roman candles burning, and that was the first I had heard of it.
Rich, thanks for calling in today. We appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. That's it's weird how you can remember certain things in your life. Like, I can't tell you what I did yesterday, but I remember 9/11 like it was yesterday.
Oh, I was.
And Rich did also.
I can remember the last 2 days I was watching disappointing football games.
Oh, that's true. Rocky in Napa, you're on 670 KBOI with David and Chris. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I have a hard time believing that those Twin Towers were dropped by planned demolition. The only problem I have now is the one that they claim that crashed in Pennsylvania. I saw some video. I don't know if you can remember, but they showed that there was a big hole in the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing.
Well,
there was no debris or anything.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, I remember there being debris.
Okay, there was some show that had it on, and they said there was a big hole in the ground, but there was no debris or anything. And I thought, what? That's not possible.
Yeah, there was debris in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that clears up something, Meyer, because no plane can crash without something.
Sure, sure. There had to be something. Yeah. Rocky, thanks for checking in today. We appreciate it. Joe in Meridian, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you, Joe?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. You know, one of the key takeaways on 9/11, the lessons learned should be that it was an immigration failure, an immigration enforcement failure, because quite a few of those, I've read one report that of the attackers, all of them were illegally in the United States, except one or two. Several were on expired student visas. I think several had fake documents. So if immigration law had been enforced, it never could have occurred. That's a complicated operation when you have four teams like that. I was an operations officer in the Army, and that was a very complicated operation. They had a lot of training. It's hard to coordinate four separate teams at different locations like that, different times.
That's why it took 2 years to do.
Yes, it took a lot of money. It's a very complicated, I know they're the enemy, but just, you have to respect, I do, that, on operationally it was well done. It took a lot to carry that off. It would have been disrupted if the immigration law had been enforced, and even if you only had four trained pilots who could handle those aircraft, for example, and immigration law had knocked out or deported three of them, they could not have carried out this operation. It would have disrupted
In fact, in the operation that they planned, the only thing that went wrong was US 93, where the passengers decided to rush the cockpit.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Things like that. But, the ones on student visas, we have computers that could have INS or at that time could have detected and rounded those up. And if they had not been in the country, this never would have happened. So I blame Washington, D.C. for allowing this, the immigration law failure of enforcement allowed this operation to happen.
Joe, thanks for the call today. We appreciate it. I will tell you, there's a lot of fingers to point. You can point at the fact that the CIA and the FBI never talked to one another, and I'm not sure they still do, and share information back and forth. And ended up that. Here's, this is some of the others from the USA Today, that, because you just mentioned United 93. The missing hijacker made it easier for United 93 passengers to storm the cockpit. This is only one. This is the only one of the four hijacked planes that did not strike its intended target, the U.S. Capitol.
Because they had four guys instead of five.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some of that is because there was, it was the only one with four hijackers instead of the five that took down all the others. The operation likely intended to round out the team for this flight. Mohammed Al-Qahtani had been refused entry by a suspicious immigration inspector at Florida's Orlando International Airport in August. So that's one of the other things. World Trade Center, obviously, a lot of people forget it had been targeted before. They had put explosions in the parking garage underneath and blown them up. And
several people died.
Yeah, that was in 93. Several people died. Number six, Vice President Cheney ordered United 93 to be shot down. And this was before the passengers obviously forced their way into the cockpit. The vice president authorized fighter aircraft to engage the aircraft, the report said. Number seven, earlier plots also targeted commercial aircraft. Ramzi Youssef, who planned the 93 World Trade Center bombing, had planned a massive attack on 12 U.S. airliners over the Pacific in 95, the 9/11 report said. Youssef worked with his uncle, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, to devise the plot, the report said. Mohammed later became one of the masterminds of 9/11. Youssef was arrested in Islamabad, Pakistan in 95 after an accomplice turned him in. The Manila plot was never carried out, obviously. Number eight, the U.S. worked on multiple attempts to kill bin Laden before 9/11. CIA and other agencies developed a plan to capture him in early 96. That was delayed and then revived, but it was hampered by concerns that military officials about relying on Afghan tribal leaders. Number nine, the CIA warned President Clinton about hijackings in 98. In the December 98 President's Daily Briefing from the CIA, the agency told Clinton that bin Laden preparing to hijack U.S. aircraft and other attacks.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I don't bring that up to point fingers. I am not pointing fingers. There's a lot of blame to go around. But at the end of the day, it's those 19 hijackers who are to blame for this. And number 10, Saudi Arabia obviously had multiple ties to the hijackers. So
one of the easiest things I think in the world to do is to say to somebody, you had been warned ahead of time that something might happen. Why didn't you prevent it?
Yeah.
Well, can you be more specific? No.
No, we can't. Well, that's why I can't, because I can't go around expecting or suspecting something to happen every second of every hour of every day, because I'm never going to get anything done.
You can, but it doesn't mean you're going to know what it is.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be able to stop it because I have no idea what I'm looking for. It's 9:45. Remembering 9/11 today, 208-336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. Chris and I will be back after this.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
David and Chris with you on the anniversary of 9/11, 16 years ago today. I will tell you the other thing, you know, you and I talked about our morning of or pre-9/11 stuff. The thing I took away after 9/11, and it lasted about 3 months. Might have been less, but it might have just been 3 months when I thought actually that things that didn't matter weren't going to matter anymore, and people would actually, and by people I mean people in government and in real life,
one of those life events where it's, wow, this really puts everything into perspective for about a day and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And I was really hopeful of that. And like I say, it lasted about 3 months. Yeah. And then I realized that everything was just going to go back the way it was. And it was a little depressing to me that that happened. I was also one of the few in Texas who thought, I got why they did it, but I thought all the games should have played that weekend. Because I thought if you don't play the games, the terrorists have done exactly what they wanted to do, which was disrupt the daily life of America.
Since the planes were still grounded, that's most of the reason the games didn't occur that weekend.
Yeah, but you could have flown the teams, obviously. You could have flown the teams, and everybody else who wanted to go to the games could have driven. And you just don't have any visiting fans. You know, so if you're playing in the Meadowlands, people from Jersey and New York can come in.
However, all the planes
were grounded. I know. But I still thought... But I think even if they had released the planes, they still wouldn't have played that weekend. And I get it in the long run.
You remember on that day, you know, that morning, it's not like we knew there were going to be four planes and that was it.
No. No,
you know,
they.
For all we knew, there could have been 100 planes.
Yeah, and there were at the time, weren't there like 2,000 planes in the air or something crazy like that?
Well, there almost always are.
Yeah,
and they all had to land, and they all had to
yep.
land somewhere,
and they had to track them. Randy in the Magic Valley, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you today?
Good, gentlemen. You know, I'm a pretty passionate guy. I'm pretty emotional. I'm sometimes abrasive, opinionated. But I've earned the right to try to have an opinion because I live in America. Freedom of speech. And my intent is never to offend, but maybe to inspire or maybe even irritate some people to start waking up. Now, whether or not I have any effect at all, I don't know. I'm just calling in, and I call into KBOI, and that's my big deal. You know, I call in at other stations, but this is the biggest one by far. And when I see apathy about our country, and I see that I have children and grandchildren that are going to grow up in this country after I'm dead, and I've said to myself, I have been given the opportunity, the tools to maintain America the way it was designed by our founding fathers. And let's face it, it works, whether or not we want to believe some communist or not. You know, it's the thing of it is if we don't maintain free market capitalism, this thing will die. And I see it teetering. And I say to myself, what can I do? I do not want to be, say, for instance, that I believe in God and I'm standing in the judgment table. And he says, well, I've given you all the tools you needed to save your country. Randy, what did you do? Well, I was texting and driving and distracted. It was on the internet. I was tired. I was a victim. I didn't feel good, whatever it was. No, every day I pour on the coal to do my best for my family. But if I don't have an environment that is safe and sound, I have nothing. And what have I left to my children? So when people who don't care about their country, whatever they are, Hispanic, Muslim, whatever, they piss me off because, you see, we're losing this thing, man. I'll hang up.
All right, Randy, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Anyway.
I was kind of waiting for something that didn't come, but that's.
I mean, it's passionate. It was all very passionate, and I agree with him that
definitely
the apathy is a frustrating thing, and part of that kind of goes back to what I was talking about, and the fact that I was hopeful that everybody would continue to get along and see that the greater good was bigger than a D or an R next to your name, or whether you had enough likes on a Facebook page or any of that stuff. At the end of the day, that stuff doesn't matter at all, and making this country all that it can be is what should matter. That's just me.
Well, and
it lasted.
That makes a great deal.
Yeah,
of sense.
It just lasted till about November, early December, and then it was all just right back to the way it was. And you just go, how did it happen? How is it? And
well, the way it happened is somebody wanted to do it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is,
what you want is for nobody to want to do that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, how does this country then forget? And to this day, I get frustrated every year that it's you only see it on 9/11, those planes going into those buildings. And a lot of people don't even show those videos anymore because it's too upsetting to people. Well, it should be upsetting to people.
Yeah.
People should get upset, and people should say, oh, that's right. We were attacked, and we're not going to let it happen again. And we're going to do everything we can to make this country as safe as possible for the people who live here without violating people's rights. It's a simple process.
Mm-hmm. And that right there is a bit of a juggling act.
It is. You're exactly right. Rush Limbaugh comes up after the national and local news. Keep it right here to listen to 670 KBOI.